Support for Commodity Week comes from the Friends of WILL and from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign. With crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
This is the June 15 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists today include Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting, Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, Aaron Curtis from Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Mike Zuzlo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Let's begin, as usual, by getting a list of items we should discuss for the day. We'll start with you, Matt Bennett. What's on the top of your mind?
I think the first thing that jumps out to me after the way that the market behaved on Thursday is just what the other analysts feel like the strength is behind, especially the corn market bouncing off the lows the way that it did. I'd like to know what everyone's opinion is whenever it comes down to acreage, because after seeing Informa come out with a little bit higher number this week, it's definitely contrary for the most part to most of the other analysts we've seen. So I'd like to talk acreage a little bit as well.
Aaron Curtis from Midco.
I'll kind of piggyback on that as well with what Matt said. I think we've continued to hear these reports at the top end of the corn yield is probably taken off a little bit. But what does that mean for the balance sheet? What kind of number is everybody plugging in to their balance sheets now as far as yield? I know it's awful early, but I guess never too early to start putting some numbers out there. So just curious what the analysts think the trade is using or what the markets are using for a yield number and where their opinions are on that.
And Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities.
I think probably staying power. It's going to be a volatile trade, you know, for the next 2 months. And it's very easy to get caught selling low and buying high, and I think that's probably the key here, you know, how to stick to your plan here and be able to sleep at night.
Mike Zuzlo, finally, at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Finally got a chance to do my first hard red wheat windshield crop tour, Todd, so maybe we can fill in some holes with some of the other guys' questions and answers and make this a wheat, corn, bean program like it should be.
All right. Well, let's start actually right there. We'll start with you and the hard red winter wheat and discuss what you've seen from your windshield. And maybe at some point I'll be able to bring my daughter in to this conversation, too. She's up in North Dakota, Montana at this point. We can talk about some spring wheat with her. But for today, hard red winter wheat in your part of the world, what's it look like?
Pretty timely that you talk about your daughter, because I think you're starting to see, I think, a little bit of a transition from a spring wheat-led market to maybe the hard red wheat market wanting to lead. We saw a new weekly high in the soft red wheat, helped by the other two commodities. We're now in the soft red wheat at the highest since February of this year. And I guess it makes a lot more sense to me, given the similarities of what I've seen versus the wheat tour that the Kansas Wheat Organization does every day. There's apparent flood damage. There's not much done at all from Manhattan to Hayes. It picks up west of Colby, but then it slows down a lot more in Goodland. And there's a noticeable slowdown in beans being planted into wheat stubble. And I think the bottom line for me, Todd, after looking at everything and watching some other inputs, like from the Kansas wheat growers, is that this is a problematic hard red wheat harvest. There's no big grand slam yield numbers coming out of anybody. And I think the trade's starting to see maybe the slower it goes, the more field losses we're going to probably have potentially. And some people are talking about Western Kansas not getting done until mid-July, which after seeing the stands, I can actually say I think that's probably accurate based on my limited understanding. So between that and the fact that you've seen some real problems in the European wheat and that Strategies Grains has started to lower their numbers, which they're very closely followed out in Europe and by the market, I think you've got the potential where the global wheat market is attracting some additional short covering, and it comes at a very welcome time.
Now, you and I have talked often enough on a Friday afternoon. I know that you like to have wheat build the base and then to lead the marketplace. Do you think this is where we're headed?
This is what I'd like to hear from the other guys, too, in all seriousness. I wonder if we're not heading towards a 2015-style wheat-led double-bottom market with the wheat bottoming in May, peaking after July 4th. And that gives us the ability for the corn to do something similar to 2015, where we carved out one low at about 382 in mid-June, and we carved out another low on the 19th of June. And by the time we got to the middle of July, we were up around 466. I'm not saying we can get that high this time around just because of the bean fundamentals, but I'm wondering whether the price pattern, the potential for a low is possible. I'd be curious to hear what the other fellows say.
What do you think about this, Matt, as a possibility?
Well, I don't see any reason why we couldn't, you know, but as far as where we go to, I think Mike's probably hesitant to think that we would go to 466 just yet without a whole lot of help. I do think that, you know, if you can see the strength in the wheat market, I mean, wheat as well today, really, really impressive bouncing off the low. You know, and being able to stage the kind of rally that it did. I think for the corn market, in my opinion, I felt like this to me feels a little bit different, you know, than last year, whereas we set the high in the month of June. Last year, you know, we started that rally on the Brazilian issues with our corn crop, you know, and then obviously we had some weather issues, but they were short-lived. And I think this year with the really tough spring, to me, we've got a little more of a window, whereas I think one or two really good rains is not going to make a lot of the problems go away that we already have with the corn crop in general. So by all means, it helps a ton to get that strength behind the corn, you know, from the wheat market, behind the corn market. But it helps even more, in my opinion, that there's a lot of unknowns with this crop. You know, we did have a really good rain last night. There's no question, but in my part of the world, but a lot of folks did not. And there's a heck of a lot of stress going on right now. And whenever you couple that with a spring in which we have multiple issues with uneven emergence, you know, poor stands, major compaction issues, and of course some nitrogen loss, you know, I think that you need fairly ideal weather to even sniff trend line yield. So I guess in my opinion, I think that we've got a little more time fundamentally to where we might be able to hold on to a chance at making new highs in the market again, and maybe by a fair amount if the weather is inclement.
Then just to reiterate, you thought that the Thursday trade, which started out sharply lower for corn and then finished higher, was impressive for the day. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, whenever you come in here after an evening in which a lot of folks got rain, obviously not everyone, but plenty of people got rain. Everyone would think that the corn market's going to trade a little lower. You know, I think in the overnight, a lot of people were scratching their heads wondering why it wasn't weaker than what it was. And then you go down six and all of a sudden it looks like the weather premium's gone. A lot of long faces. And then by the end of the day, we get a rally back. You know, at times we're trading more than a dime off the lows. That's a pretty impressive move, in my opinion, after a night in which we had that much precipitation.
How do the crops look in your area?
Pretty darn good in places. You know, where we got corn planted early, it looks pretty good. I think that the stands are a little more even, a little more uniform. Some of the corn that did not get in on that first go-round doesn't look that hot. Some of the corn that was planted late has struggled a fair amount. I think that the soybeans, you know, a lot of guys have gone a couple of three times to try to get their stands where they want them. They're finally starting to look a little bit better. But before this rain, I mean, they just weren't growing. I mean, there wasn't enough moisture, and we had quite a bit of heat. Topsoil dried out extensively in a short period of time. I think now we're going to be in pretty good shape where we got the rain. Where we didn't get the rain, it's still, you know, things don't really look all that hot. But I feel like with all the traveling that I do, we're one of the better areas right here in my part of the world, you know, as far as especially the corn looks.
Aaron Curtis, how about in your area? What's corn look like in McLean County, Illinois?
You know, overall, not too bad. I think it'd probably be rated good to slightly above good for the most part. We did get some rain here in parts of McLean County last night. That's going to be well received, of course, with some of the hot weather. I think that, Just a few little things, though, that have, you know, just not been perfect this year, like we've seen the last couple of years. You know, like Matt mentioned, some of the stands continue to be a little bit of an issue. Still hard to quantify exactly how much got replanted, but I think just a few little things here and there that just are taking the top end off. That's what we continue to hear from the producers that talk to our elevator customers, is the top end is likely taken off. Still some potential for above average crop, but maybe not quite the bin busters we've been used to the last couple years in this part of the world. And then we got kind of into that dry weather pattern where things just didn't grow. Of course, we saw corn curling up pretty consistently the last 3 or 4 days, and that probably going to continue to kind of limit the top end. So, you know, overall okay, but just not quite the great start we've seen in prior years.
So, Kirk Kimmel, I want you to take us from the eastern part of the Corn Belt all the way to the western Corn Belt and give me kind of your assessment after you've talked to a few folks, and I imagine you have, because I think probably Ohio, Indiana doesn't look so good, Illinois okay. I'm betting Iowa, because we don't hear very much out of them, and that always that always tells me that they might look better than we think they do. But you can tell me what you think. So what do you hear?
No, you're pretty well dead on that. Whenever guys don't talk, they're in fairly good shape. But they were stressed this week here. We expect Monday's crop conditions report to see just a little deterioration in Iowa, but Iowa, Minnesota. But then you go on west of there into the Dakotas, you know, they've been extremely dry, so it varies quite a bit. Here going into Monday, the central to eastern belts expected to receive a half to 1 3/4 inches on 70-80% coverage, isolated heavier amounts. Now the key will be as we move into next week, the weather pattern's a little bit more iffy than what the trade was more comfortable with midweek here. So we can get back into another weather event here coming in Monday morning. Just to something to add to on the original wheat question there, wheat's basically one of those commodities, the old saying is you trade wheat, you sleep in the streets, and it could be very volatile. If you look at a wheat chart, we've been consolidating for sideways for almost a year. So we've been coiling. And it's getting into a position here where technically the trade can maybe flip their short position into a long position. We start making some higher highs as we move in and get this harvest pressure out of the way. So wheat could be a sleeper in through here. I've been rooting for Mike all winter long here on these seminars. I was with him on the wheat to lead the charge here.
All right. So, Mike, we're rooting for you. And he says there's a base building there, coiling, and maybe a breakout to the upside is coming. We'll see. So Mike, everybody, I think, I want to find out what everybody's using on their balance sheets at this moment. Mike, what's your balance sheet for corn and for soybeans look like?
Yeah, I'm still around 168 and around 48 on corn and beans. Planalytics, which is a Pennsylvania satellite imagery, remote imaging type firm, came out today. And I think this helps maybe shed some light on why we saw such a significant bounce. I think it was probably algorithmically handled by these changes. They dropped their corn yield down 0.8 of a bushel since the 1st of June to 166.9, and they took their bean yield down even more, down 1.2 bushels since the 1st of June to 46.8. I'm at a carryover out of about 1.8 on the new crop corn and just a little over or a little under 500 million on the new crop beans. So beans still stand out as the problematic fundamental feature. I think what Matt and Aaron and when I was listening to Kurt and Matt and Aaron, I was thinking to myself, you know, we really were on the verge, based upon crop conditions and what producers are telling us, of repeating 2012 had we not gotten the rains that those who were blessed with rains this week got, and maybe they'll get some more later this next 6-7 days. But we really were seeing crop conditions at 2012 levels. And I think this helps, you know, firm up the idea of why a company like Planalytics, who looks at satellite imagery, would take the yield down so quickly in just 15 days from their last estimate. So it's welcome from a standpoint of seeing the Federal Reserve raise their interest rates. It's welcome to talk about the wheat having some more up in it potentially, and it's very welcome to talk about smaller yields, not bigger yields, this early in the year. Three major things that are different than what it's been the past, you know, 3 years. And doesn't mean I'm not a seller on the way up or a hedger at price targets, but it gives you a chance, I think, going into the June acreage report.
Yeah, I have the luxury, Mike, of being able to go look back at different crop years because I go out and capture video of them for my job here on campus. And I was just looking at the 2012 corn and soybean video in the last week and a half, and it surprised me how good those crops actually look. I just didn't recall that they looked they look very much like they do today, or this crop did at that time.
Right, and the trade was very late on realizing it in 2012. It wasn't until we started taping videos and sending it up into Chicago, and you got it on TV, then the trade started to realize it. But June killed the crop in 2012.
Right. So here we are again. I want to come back and ask this question to each of you. What is it? And Matt, you asked the question, so I'll let you go last here. But what is it that put under the grain markets, and Mike, you gave us a reason for the day, under the corn market, that strength? Mike says maybe some of the algorithm trade based on some things that are happening in some other parts of the yield developing world or those satellite feeds. Kurt Kimmel, what do you think happened today? Why did the corn manage to come up? What was the strength? What was the basis of it?
More buyers than sellers, kind of.
That is true.
Well, it was basically panic city. You know, it's raining, rain makes grain makes corn makes whiskey, and you know the story. But what happened, too, is the 6 to 10 day or the drought monitor came out. If you look at the drought monitor, you see some yelling starting to show up in Iowa, Missouri, and Illinois, and little dabs on east. And I think it was a little bit of that. The wheat's been on fire. I think it was a little bit of that. We saw quite a bit of spread activity in the early trade, but we hit some Fibonacci numbers to the downside. If you look at a price chart, this corn market's been making a spike low about every 4 weeks, and so we're in that time window in here. Then, two, with the uncertainty on this yield, which is a moving target for the next 2 months, I think the trade was fearful of pushing it much lower in through here, and it just kind of fueled itself. And we were able to record a hook reversal to the upside. We kind of made a new low and closed higher on the day, so you can view the lows today as a fairly important technical chart point to watch here for the next 2-3 weeks.
There are a couple of things there. Aaron Curtis at the black boxes would have traded it, the algorithms on the technical side, and then they probably would have caught the Twitter feed on the yields. Do you have any other things that might have been supportive?
Well, I think it's always safe to follow the money, right? So the wheat money was on the buy side here today, and that helped pull corn up as well. I think the exact opposite happened there Wednesday at midday. GFS model came out. It was a little wetter. We sold off the corn market there at the end of the day. Exact opposite happened here on Thursday. The GFS model comes out a little drier for late next week. The market firms up. So classic weather market here. We're going to be back and forth. I know the GFS model hasn't had a great track record here the last 3 weeks or so, but it's something the trade keeps tabs on pretty closely, and I think we're going to continue to see some of these gyrations back and forth depending on how these weather models get updated. But of course, we can't sleep like Mike's been telling us on this wheat market. It's a pretty good, impressive performance today, and see if there's any follow through tomorrow. But you know, when the funds are as short as they are on the corn market, any little blip that suggests some positive news, I think, is going to be met with some buying. That's why we're going to continue to see some pretty interesting volatility, I think, over the next few weeks.
Did you buy much old corn on the rally last week?
We did last week. Percentage-wise, tough to tell, but I think, you know, that Tuesday, Wednesday into Thursday morning, producer was pretty active, bought new crop, or excuse me, some new crop, but probably old crop, and still a ratio of 2-1, 3-1, so they continue to reward the old crop on these new rallies. We got above that 380 mark on July futures, bought stuff every nickel up to that 391 high. Of course, pulled the plug out from underneath everybody there Monday with a sharp drop. We continue to see a little bit of interest anytime we perk back up to the upside, Todd, but not nearly as busy this week as we were last week.
Are they down to the so-called Vegas bushels now, and is that a bigger number than it has been in the past?
I would say maybe a so on the beans, but there's still quite a bit of old crop corn out there to buy, Todd, probably anywhere from 20% to 30%, depending on what location you're at, and still plenty of corn in some areas, even out in farmers' bins at this point. So I think, anytime we push back up into the top end of this range, 385 to 390, going to be met with some pretty good selling resistance. And then, you know, even some basis contracts still would like to be priced with a four in front of it. So I think if we see that push up into the nearby months, into that four area, there's going to be quite a bit of pricing that still continues as we move through the latter part of this summer, Todd.
Matt Bennett, how do you handle both the old crop and new crop sales for corn?
Well, you know, as far as the old crop goes, we've been talking to producers for quite a while that we felt like we would lose, a decent amount of basis if we would get this sort of a rally. And so we want to kind of spread our risk out just a little bit. I know some guys wanted to enter into some basis contracts, which is, fine. I didn't want to go too heavily there just in case, we ended up with the weather straightening out and we turned back and go the other way, because if we would have went south on the futures, then the basis would have probably tried to work its way back up. And so I definitely didn't want to get too many eggs in any one basket. But as far as the old crop corn goes, we've been encouraging producers to have your offers in place and, to be trying to get out of a decent amount of the corn. If you want to keep gambling bushels, go ahead. I'd like to focus a little bit more upon the new crop corn from here forward if possible. But I do think you're going to have a lot of diminishing returns on the basis, kind of pulling back from you if you get any large scale rally. Now last week, seemed like a lot bigger rally than what it was, but it ended up 15 cents or so by the end of the week. Lost a little bit of basis depending on where you were at. But bottom line, we really didn't get the appreciation that a lot of producers were looking for. But yet we still saw a lot of sales because there's so many bushels out there. I think, on new crop corn, I'm probably in a situation where most of the guys we've tried to work with, just getting a few of these calls in place just in case this market rallies, you'll have the confidence to do so. I think this year having the courage calls in place for a lot of producers that I work with is probably as important as any year, because there's so many unknowns. A lot of the guys I work with, have a lot of question marks with their corn crop on how it looks. They're a little concerned that a little bit of inclement weather could go a long way as far as damaging their yield potential. And so, when they do get in that maybe 410 to 420 range and they want to make another inclement sale, they don't want to feel like they're going to get too overextended. So it's nice to have those calls in place. But I'm really personally not looking to make any more sales until we get closer to around 415, 420. If we can make that move, we've already sold some corn a little bit above $4. And again, we've got those calls in place. So I'm a little more hesitant right now. I want to take a wait-and-see approach, and I feel like we're in pretty good shape where we're at.
And Kirk Kimmel, if he's going to do that, he'll need a strategy for staying power against the volatility in the marketplace. Courage calls are one of those things. What are you telling folks?
Oh, Matt just took the words out of my mouth. Good job, man. I've been thinking the same dang thing that you. It makes the selling a little bit more easier here. I know we've talked that over and over quite a bit, but yeah, this first leg up here, 405, 406, we, tried to get some more pushed out the door. I agree with Meg. I have some levels above the marketplace and have them sitting there. So as you go higher, you've got that comfort. Plus, too, it's hard to commit to a whole lot of cash with this yield kind of a moving target. Man, today we did some floor protection plans for guys. They were worried and wanting to make some sales. So instead of actually selling the board or coming in and making some cash sales on a down market, some of these guys were very uneasy. We put some price floors in. Reason being, if you go back a year ago, we topped this corn market here on June 18th, and it virtually went straight down, about $1.30, and there was no dead cat bounce whatsoever. So this market can do whatever it wants to in a heartbeat, so you got to have some type of plan intact and have some staying power.
So Mike Zuzulo, at the end of this month, we will get the acreage numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture. Informa delivered its numbers earlier in this week. They essentially were the same as what USDA had put out. However, their prevent plant number was much larger than others had been. How did you view those?
Yeah, I think that's right on the money. And I think the other thing that I picked up this week, again, if they, and I don't know this to be the fact, but if hard red wheat producers are like soft red wheat producers back in Indiana and Illinois, then you're putting in along I-70 especially, you're putting in beans on wheat stubble, but they don't have the wheat stubble yet. They still have a lot, I'd say probably two-thirds or more of the hard red wheat yet to get out of the state of Kansas and out of eastern Colorado. So I really wonder whether the double crop bean acres will show a remarkable decline as well in terms of the five-year average, because the USDA should be able to pick that up at this point in time. So I think that's the key is, as far as the selling, as long as I can keep the 200-day moving average and the 200-month moving average as technical support in the corn, I feel like I'm still going to try and get another 20 cents up. $4 in the old crop, $4.20 in the new crop. That's the place where I'd like to get some more hedges, you know, made at this point. And, you know, the key, I think, what I'm hearing the other guys say, and I couldn't agree more, is that this market after Thursday just simply needs follow through to take away the fear of what happened last year around this time and take away the fear of a reversal that just opened us up to another wave down. So I follow through after Thursday and going into the end of the week, I think it's just absolutely critical now.
Now you have a 500 million bushel carryout for your soybeans. You're not certain that we'll have as many wheat beans as in the past. Is your bean acreage number lower on the balance sheet?
Not yet. I've just seen this, so I have not adjusted that down yet, Todd. And I could see myself getting back closer to a 475 level for new crop beans, and I would feel more comfortable on that physically from the standpoint of what we're used to getting in terms of beans actual yield, because I think maybe 48 maybe is still too high at this stage of the game. I'm going to wait till the end of the month to talk about the bean yield and the corn yield changes, but I could probably bring my harvested acres of beans down or my planted acres of beans down or a combination to where I'm closer to a 475 carryover. Still makes it tough without wheat and corn leading the market to get above $10. And so around $9.80, $10 in November beans, that to me is still a sell target for catch-up sellers especially.
Matt Bennett, it seems like it was an awfully long planting season, though we finished, I suppose, on time. Do we have an idea whether we switched very many acres, in your opinion?
Well, we heard about a little bit of it here in the last couple of weeks. You know, I heard a few people talking about it in the seed industry. Now, you know, you hear a little bit here and there, and if you hear a little bit of it in a lot of places, it could add up, but I don't know that it's going to add up to a significant amount of acres overall. I don't know that we're going to have as much prevent plant in some of the areas, like in the Dakotas, that we've seen a lot of prevent plant in the past. So, you know, I think that maybe in some of the areas of the Eastern Corn Belt where the weather was so challenging, we don't have as many folks that I guess maybe are used to, would be the way to put it, used to doing prevent plant. And so, I'm not sure that we're going to have as much as what everyone thought, but I guess in my opinion, I'm looking at maybe a tick over 90 million acres on soybeans, and then on corn, I could see us scaling back a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be as much as what some people think.
Do you think what you're at is where the market is at this point?
Oh, I think that the market is probably similar to what, you know, I think the market is probably assuming a slight reduction from intentions. I don't think they're assuming a million, but I could see them assuming something, you know, just shy of maybe a half a million, somewhere in that area is about where I think the market would be at this point, which is probably similar to where I'm talking. I think that if you do end up with, you know, 89.5 million acres, you know, my yield is probably similar to Mike, maybe just a little, maybe a shade under. You know, I guess in my opinion, I'm probably getting closer to, you know, a 1.7 carry out. But regardless, I think that it's going to be a real chore, in my opinion, to be able to get, you know, trend line yields, especially we're going to have some issues if we drop this planted acreage number. I think that you're going to see a lot of support hit the market if we haven't already seen it yet.
Aaron Curtis, your concerns on the acreage, if any at all?
Yeah, you know, I'm not really seeing a lot of change at this point, at least as of June 15th. Some marginal changes, but I don't expect any big changes here at the end of the month. I think, at least based on the planting numbers, you know, most of the corn, at least the first time, got planted that wanted to get planted. So probably like Matt, hearing a little bit of stuff here and there, but no big issues as far as seeing any change. And then, of course, I think the yield, you know, obviously moves the balance sheet a lot quicker than that acres number is in anyway. I would say yield right now using something around about a one bushel lower than where the USDA is at, somewhere in that 169 and a half based on what I know here mid-June. So not looking for a big reduction, but I think the ending stocks, at least demand-wise, a couple things can you keep an eye on is new crop corn exports. Still think they're a little too high here at 1.875. A big second crop in Brazil still makes me a little nervous as far as cutting into some export demand moving into the fall months. I think it's going to have a long tail to it. I think we continue to have some competition issues here as we move through the end of the summer. That's going to continue to move into the fall. So I think the USDA is still a little too high there. And still think, at least on the old crop bean, ending stocks are a little too low on bean exports. We'll see. I know cancellations are always the fear here as we move through the summer, but exports today, as of this morning, another 12 million sold this Thursday. That puts us at 2.165. The USDA is at 2050. So I still think we're going to see that ending stocks number for old crop beans come down a little bit before all said and done, which then carries over and tightens us up a little bit into new crop, Todd.
Well, let's begin to wrap this up. I think Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities out of Normal will start with you. Your final word for the afternoon.
Well, I got several little final words. I think Matt mentioned, you know, like North Dakota there. There's a one analyst, I don't know his name, but talking about maybe some higher corn acres, just the fact that the fudge factor on prevent plant, we saw the Western Belt get the corn in, and that prevent plant number might not be there, so they might have to raise corn acres slightly in June. But that prevent plant, that's a long drawn out process, and we won't know that until clear back in January. So the acreage is a little bit of a moving target. I agree with Aaron. The bottom line is more affected by yield. You move that yield, it's a major issue. But my final word would be bean demand, bean oil, biodiesel, Todd.
Mike Zuzlo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting.
Well, continuing on Kurt's mindset of the biofuels, we've got getting ready to talk about new biofuel standards, maybe as early as this week. That would be one of the few things that I think could disrupt what we've all talked about the last half hour, and certainly something we don't want to see reduced. But 15 billion gallons is still the trajectory that most people are thinking as we go into the end of the week trade. I would say, just to recap, hedge on the way up, at least wait for the ability to get maybe a double bottom here led by the wheat. And if we can't get it by the end of the month in the June acreage numbers, regroup and see if you don't have to shift your marketing plan some.
Aaron Curtis from Midco.
As far as old crop sales continue to reward the rallies, I think each time we've visited the upper end of the range, we've seen some producer interest. Backed off quickly after that. The case again last week, we got up to 390 July corn, quickly backed off that. I know we're in a weather market now, but keep in mind as we continue to move to the top end of this range, we're going to continue to be met by some resistance. Would be very wary of much basis improvement moving forward. The end user continues to eye how much old crop corn still left out there. So continue to reward rallies, especially up at the top end of this range, if we do get a chance to move back up there again.
And finally, Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds.
Yeah, I definitely want to reward the market, especially on old crop. I want to be a little bit more patient as far as this corn market goes, but certainly have strategies in place try to look at this maybe as getting an insulated hedge on in this corn market, especially if you want to get very aggressive whatsoever. I'd like to have those calls in place because obviously we've seen a growing season so far with its fair share of surprises, and some of the extremes concern me just a little bit. So I don't want to get too overextended in any one direction, and definitely not get too bullish whenever the market does what we've been wanting it to do all along, which was get up to and over this $4 mark.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always listen to the whole of our program online at WILLAG.org. There you'll find all of our daily programming as well. You can find us in iTunes, Stitcher, the Google Play Store, and check us out on the NPR One app. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting out of Channel Seeds in Windsor, Illinois, Aaron Curtis of Midco in Bloomington, Illinois, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and Mike Zuzla, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.